Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Got an interesting show for you this afternoon. But I want to start out in kind of reestablishing some things that some of you have probably heard before, but it's very interesting as you go back over these items. You clarify your thoughts, and also you learn more. Billy, there's a man named Edward Albert Meyer. His nickname is Billy. He lives in Switzerland. He's 80 years old. He lives in a tiny mountain village about 45 minutes east of Zurich. It's called Hinterschmidt-Ruti. It's nestled in a pine forest among the snow Cap Mountains in northern Switzerland. Billy has had a very interesting life. He's written over 80 books. He also, right around 40 to 50 books. He's written about 2,000 contact reports. His interesting experiences go back to a time when he was about 5 years old in 1945. He started getting telepathic messages to go out into the forest near his home in Bulak. Bulak is even a little farther north. And at that time, Billy was about 5 years old, 1945. He's living in a town called Niederflux. And he got this message to go out into the forest. The message came from a man named Svath. He came mentally, telepathically. Billy went out into the forest near his home in a clearing in a meadow area, and out of the sky came a silvery pear-shaped craft. Svath got out of the craft, and Billy explains that it felt like he was lifted up by ghostly hands and taken into the ship, and they both went into high orbit, where Billy got to see the beautiful spherical Earth and all of its majesty. Svath is an extraterrestrial human being from a star system called the Pleiaden star system. These people, unfortunately, have been called the Pleiadians here on the Earth, but they're not from our Pleiades. They're from a star system some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades, in a different space-time configuration. Our universe has 7 space-time configurations, which we could roughly call dimensions, for lack of a better word. These extraterrestrial humans, these Pleiaden, were sometimes called the Pleiadians in the ancient Earth times. They lived on the Earth. They intermingled with the Earth peoples to a degree. They lived in civilizations, some of the Pleiaden during the times of Atlantis and Lemuria, which was about 130,000 years ago, and during the time of another extraterrestrial human named Pelagon, whose civilization was about 150,000 years ago. Both of those civilizations ended in titanic wars, which nearly destroyed our planet. Wars that it took centuries for the ecosystem of the Earth to recover from. Billy, his spirit form, we all have a spirit form, is very ancient. It's 9.6 billion years old. These extraterrestrials, these Pleiaden, have the technology to identify and track spirit forms, and they had seen this reincarnating spirit on the Earth. Again, the spirit form is called the Geist form in the German. It's also referred to as the Telstock, or a fragment of the universal consciousness that exists in an area in the middle brain called the superior colliculus. It's the part of your brain that is in control of the integration of your senses, particularly sight. Now, Billy's spirit form is very ancient. It's 9.6 billion years old. And these extraterrestrials have the technology to identify spirit forms. So they recognize this same individual reincarnating for about the past 10, 13,000 years on the Earth. He's lived as the people that we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And during his lifetimes on the earth, he taught what are called the creational natural laws. The creational natural laws include the law of love, and that's a kind of reverential love. The law of harmony, which deals with having harmony in our thinking, a neutral positive balance, it's called. Another law is the law of reincarnation. There are laws, creational natural laws, in regards to the number of people that should be on a planet this size. And in our case, it's a billion or so, or somewhere between 500 million and a billion. There's a law related to striving, a creational natural law. This law says we all need to strive to evolve, that all plants and animals and human beings have to strive to evolve, and that your sense of life, your happiness, is related to your willingness and the fact that you do strive. If your striving gets interrupted, you will lose your sense of life, you'll lose your sense of happiness. So happiness for the human being is tied into these, fulfilling these creational natural laws, like the law of striving, the law of harmony, which means that you should have a neutral positive balance in your thinking. To identify or reinforce the idea of neutral positive thought, you can tell yourself, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm thankful, I'm enthusiastic, I'm in harmony. I persist, I persevere, I endure, I am calm. These kind of thoughts are all mentioned in one of Billy's books called The Might of Thoughts. So Billy's spirit form is very ancient. These extraterrestrials knew he was coming to the Earth for a particular mission. They didn't realize at the very beginning that he had been someone called Nokodamian in one of his previous lives, and we all have previous lives. And when he was Nokodamian, he was their teacher. So this is a very interesting and profound story, particularly when you start to see the prophetic material come true. You know, one of the things that the Meyer materials talked about occurring for decades now, he's been talking about the time coming when there would be rolling walls of fire in the United States and these hurricanes. So I want to play some clips related to these hurricanes, the fires, not the hurricanes, and particularly these are fires that have gone on within the past month or two in Southern California. So bear with me while I set this up. It'll take just a second.
Santa Rosa, California looks like a nuclear bomb detonated on its soil. Literally, city blocks incinerated. These houses, no more. This is one hell of a forest fire, ladies and gentlemen. Rex Bear Leak Project, how the heck are you? These satellite images are from the 12th and 13th of October, after this fire just devastated this beautiful, lush area. You can see here, days before this happened, these houses, I'm sure, are probably in the million, $2 million, $3 million house range. I don't know. I live in Texas. Houses are pretty cheap out here. But look at it now. Looks like a war zone, doesn't it? It literally looks like something just exploded. I don't know. I mean, look at these houses. Beautiful.
Now, in California, we have an ugly situation itself.
Good morning, George. Good morning, George. And this is what it looks like in so many communities here. Apocalyptic. Now, what in is that it tore through right into the heart of major towns like Santa Rosa, 5,000 people. And the armies of firefighters that we've seen out here have been helpless to stop the blaze.
Again, that guy. I remember him in the hurricane, right? Irma, I think. Or Harvey, was it? I don't know. He's everywhere. Anyway, so California fire. Car completely melted while trees and paved road seems okay. What? How is that possible? It seems as if something else happened here, folks. If you take a look at the trees, they're completely okay. The paved road is okay. The car is completely melted. Aluminium and all that, gone. You know, people are talking about directed weapons here, and I am starting to think they're correct. Power. I know it sounds kind of conspiratory, but if you just stop to think about it, it has happened before. You see, houses are completely gone. There is nothing left but the trees. The trees, they're all there. That's a little bizarre. If you stop to think about it, you know, that's what a lot of people are doing right now, and they're coming to the conclusion that, indeed, see another picture, a proof.
We are heading into another difficult day in California where they're dealing with the deadliest wildfires in state history.
We're looking at a new round of hot, dry winds today, which are expected to fuel those flames of a situation that's already dire in so many places. We want you to look at this body cam footage, however, from a sheriff's deputy. He was driving through a neighborhood completely engulfed by flames.
Yeah, we're going to play more of this coming up. He actually rescues somebody. Here, though, is what we know this morning. 17 fires burning right now in the state. 5,700 structures destroyed. At least 35 people dead.
And these fires have been burning for nearly a week now. Rob is standing by with the forecast, but we're going to start with ABC's Lindsay Janis, who is in hard-hit Santa Rosa for us this morning. Lindsay, good morning to you.
Good morning, Paula. We have had fresh evacuations in Sonoma County overnight. These fires are on the move, being driven by stronger winds. Fire conditions this weekend being described as critical. It comes as we are getting our first glimpse into what it was like for first responders and residents the night that firestorm first tore through these communities, causing utter devastation.
Shut up, it!
This morning, incredible images from inside the initial response to what is now the deadliest week in California wildfire history. The body cam on this Sonoma County Sheriff's deputy rolling as he races to warn residents in the middle of the night, a wall of flames closing in. The deputy gasping for air as he helps a disabled woman into his car.
Watch your leg. Sir!
Massive fire engulfing the road. He races to safety using his megaphone to alert the community.
It's mandatory evacuation order. Leave your homes.
The terrifying firestorm haunting hundreds of thousands of residents in this area who are now bracing for more destruction.
So we're one windstorm away from having this town demolished.
Overnight, the battle against the giant infernos intensifying with strong winds and low humidity.
This is a dangerous event. It is not over. Stay away from the houses.
Firefighters scrambling to contain the 17 fires, so far scorching more than 200,000 acres.
This is painstaking work.
Yes, it is. It's very tedious, very hard. You can tell by the incline of the slope, plus the conditions we work in, obviously smoky, hot, low humidity. This is the meat and potatoes of firefighting.
The flames claiming the lives of at least 35 people, hundreds more missing, and so many now homeless, like Michael Clements, a local firefighter.
More than anything, I wanted to get my family out, and that's all I cared about.
40 active firefighters lost their homes in these fires. This was Mike Clements' home. He says all he had time to do was grab his family, his wallet, his cell phone. He looked out the window and saw orange flames. This is what is left of 3,000 square feet and four bedrooms, a metal garage door frame with what he says was a brand new car there parked in the garage. And the entire neighborhood looks like this. Total destruction. At least 5% of homes here in Santa Rosa wiped out. And the damage estimate, Dan and Paula, more than $1.2 billion. And this crisis isn't over yet.
Those visuals are just so haunting. Lindsay Janis, thank you for
your
reporting.
The power of the inferno.
Absolutely. And as mentioned, the conditions, they are not favorable for fighting those fires today.
So let's get it over to Rob, who's tracking it all. Hey, Rob.
Good morning, guys. We are looking for a setup similar to last week, and we've already seen winds gusting over 50 miles an hour this morning across Mount Diablo.
Parts of California continue to burn. As you can see here, on fire. In this image taken by Jason Moore shows this La Tuna fire or Burbank fire, LA fire, as they have it hashtagged here. It's getting out of control. I know people personally that have been ran off of the property that have contacted me saying, look, this thing's getting bad. There's not a whole lot of media coverage on it. It continues to grow, and people have lost homes, ran off property. And as you can see here in this image, it's showing just how close it is to downtown in this area. Hillside's just on fire, ablaze. It's a pretty wicked scene, but this is what's happening out here in Cali with this latest round of fires.
Tonight, firefighters battling a blaze spread out over thousands of acres, forcing hundreds of evacuations, destroying homes in what's being called the largest fire in LA history. The so-called La Tuna Canyon fire sparked Friday. Fueled by scorching temperatures, low humidity, and high winds, embers hopped California's 210 freeway, creating a tunnel of flames before shutting down traffic. This weekend, the flames marched into neighborhoods.
We got to get this, because if this oak tree goes, it'll carry over, so we got to keep that wet.
More than 1,000 firefighters are on the front lines trying to stop the spread, creating containment on the ground, dropping retardant from the air.
Really, honestly, it's my worst fear.
The fire is burning above Tracy Goldman's home. She and her family spent the day packing anything important.
Our honeymoon picture from 28 years ago, so that can't be replaced.
A few doors down, we watched with Sylvia Gizelgian's family, who just evacuated, looking on as flames pushed into their yard.
This is the sound and the sight of firefighters losing ground in the suburbs of Los Angeles.
Water!
The notorious Santa Ana wind turning this fire into a blowtorch before sunrise in Corona.
It's scary. It's really scary. It makes your heart stop. It freaks you out just knowing that it's so close.
Evacuate. 1,500 people in a scramble to escape the flames quickly closing in.
Leave the area now.
500 homes in the path of the fire. Freeways and roads leading to safety surrounded by the blaze. Known as the Canyon Fire, 25-mile-an-hour winds whip through these dry hills, funneling the flames like a river towards homes. A nonstop air attack, helicopters using night vision soaring into neighborhoods. With Southern California now beginning Santa Ana wind season, the most dangerous weeks are ahead. But the fire season has already cost a record $2 billion. And now the firefight is getting more dangerous here every day and every night. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News, Los Angeles.
Much of California is on fire tonight or at risk of going up in flames. Red flag warnings, meaning conditions are ripe for wildfires, are up all over the state. More than 20 major fires are burning. 15 of them started in just the past 24 hours, and they are moving quickly, fueled by strong winds. They have already burned more than 70,000 acres, destroyed 1,500 homes and commercial buildings, and forced 20,000 people to evacuate. Here's Mireya Villarreal.
In Southern California this afternoon, several hillside homes went up in flames, pushed by strong Santa Ana winds. Firefighters are making a desperate stand to save others that are burning. It is just one of several wildfires
that is overwhelming the state. The worst in Northern California's wine country, which broke out late last night. Home after home completely engulfed. Some burning to the ground before firefighters could even arrive.
I just saw flames all up on the hill behind my house.
The fire was fanned by nearly 50 mile per hour winds and raged through several towns in Napa and Sonoma counties. It was well after midnight when many homeowners got the urgent call. They had just minutes to get out.
20 police forces. I want to evacuate.
Patients from two hospitals were also evacuated as flames grew close. And this is what Alyssa O'Gorman saw as she fled her home in Calistoga.
This is my neighborhood in flames, completely in flames.
By daybreak, the extent of the damage became painfully clear. Entire neighborhoods overrun, little left but the smoldering remains of hundreds of homes, block after block reduced to rubble. Today, as the fire kept growing, it threatened even more communities. Residents.
So what is the future of the United States? The Meyer material has been talking about these hurricanes and these fires coming for quite some time now. I'll read just a few things. One particular interesting prophecy. This is what Billy says. He says, during the next few years, man of earth, the reins of the horse will slip away from you. Now death will be extremely familiar with you. You will neither find peace nor rest. Death destroys mankind, air and the earth, due to scientific mountains of lies by your politics and your religions, which you demand spiritless wages from. Also, powers of nature and of the cosmos arm themselves to fight against the anti-logos. And it goes on. It says also that some of these prophecies include, unquestionably, the climate change is now evident will lead to increases in hurricane activities and other destructive natural events. It also talks about rolling walls of fire, which will rage across the U.S., and hurricanes, which will rage across the U.S., and this is exactly what we've been seeing. Astonishing. You know, if you've listened to this show at all, you know I don't really emphasize the prophecy aspect of the Meyer case that much, but when it's thrown in your face like this, I think you got really no choice but to stand up and take a look at things. I want to digress ever so slightly and talk about ancient religion and the New World Order a tad. And this is kind of a tangent from the Meyer material, but I want to get back on track when I talk about the Giza intelligences a tad. There's a very interesting point of view that comes from the Zulu people. Zulu actually means people from the stars. And the Zulu believe they are a royal bloodline from the stars. These people have actually known for years that the world is not flat. They also know that time and space are the same thing. And they talk about these high-tech people who were warring in the sky in their ancient times. And another thing that comes up is the Caucasus Mountains, which is supposed to be the origin of the white race. And supposedly there are these bloodlines which exist all over the earth. Bloodlines which I think stem back to what the Meyer material calls the Giza intelligences. The Giza intelligences headquartered themselves thousands of years ago far below the Giza Plateau in these old cubicle constructions, which are 73,000 years old. These Giza intelligences, I believe they created religions, and you could call them prison religions and prison histories. that have been created around the world. And the reason they're called prisons sometimes, and I've heard David Icke even call these religions prison religions, that happens when people take literally that which is supposed to be symbolic. And, for example, I want to bring up something called from the religion of ancient Babylon, an individual called Tammuz. These prison religions have been created by taking literally symbolic things. If you go back in history, you'll see there were many people, for example, born on December 25th. And some of these individuals were given frankincense and myrrh. There was, in ancient times, in the Babylonian religion, an ancient trinity. Nimrod, the son of Nimrod, was Tammuz. And the queen was Semiramis, I believe her name was. She was the female element of the Babylonian trinity. Anyway, Tammuz was called the son of God in ancient Babylon. Interestingly, he is said to have, even in the ancient Babylonian times, died to save the sins of humanity, so to speak. They put him in a tomb, and they rolled a rock across the tomb. 3 days later, they rolled back the rock, and Tammuz was gone. This is very similar to the story we get in Christianity. There appears to be a global elite which is trying to control the earth. And Billy calls that a consciousness conditioned tyranny in The Goblet of Truth, one of his books. He says it stems from all the way back to the Roman Empire. And he explains that they are trying to remove our self-determination. And many researchers now are noticing this. They're seeing that a world government is being set up, a cashless society, an Orwellian state. An Orwellian state is a kind of society described by George Orwell in his book 1984. They want a microchip population. Aaron Russo talked about the microchip population. Billy Meyer talked about this too in The Goblet of Truth. The Rockefellers met with Aaron Russo about a year before the attack on the World Trade Center. Aaron Russo was told the plan was to create a microchipped world population. And what does Billy say about the microchipped world population? Well, he discusses this in bulletin number 2, which gets off on a lot of tangents, one of which is what they call the deep space platform. So let me see how much I can find here. The deep space platform is something astonishing. It's something that was put up. The beginnings of this was put up in the 50s. And it's gotten more and more advanced over time. But they have a deep space platform, the global elite, that can do anything going on the Earth anywhere. People don't believe this is true. It's called the DSP monitoring system. Let me read what it says in figure bullets number 2. America has taken the first step toward the horrifying futuristic vision of total control over every human being on Earth. This vision signifies that the terrestrials will soon be unable to take a single step without being observed and controlled by an all-inclusive monitoring system, which would eventually entail the implanting of a coded chip in every person. Billy made this prediction in 1995. It's a horrible vision. And this foreshadows what they call the New World Order, which was prophesied in ancient times. I was just talking about Tammuz from the ancient Babylonian religion. Tammuz was called the son of God. And I know this is blasphemy for me to say this, from the perspective of the Christian religion, but this is how far back this manipulation goes. David Icke would say it is interdimensional reptilians that are doing this. The Meyer material says it's extraterrestrial humans that used to reside under the Giza Plateau. And Billy in 1953 got to go down there with Ascot and actually see this bizarre situation. You don't need to study anything that's made up, because the truth is so astonishing, it will turn your brain into a pretzel. It's overwhelming. The more I study this, the more layers of the onion I pull back. One of the things, and I'm in the process, by the way, of rebuilding my website. And this, I don't know why I took this on now. There's probably never a good time to take it on. I want to talk about Jesus versus Emmanuel and the letter J. Believe it or not, the letter J didn't exist in ancient history, and I want to do more research on this. But in a nutshell, the people that we call Job, the person that we call Jesus, were called by different names in the ancient past. For example, the book of Job was initially the book of Iob. The person that we call Jesus Christ couldn't have been called Jesus Christ because there's no letter J. There was no J sound in the Hebrew, in the Greek, in the Aramaic, or in even not until English in the 1550s did we get the letter J. Anyway, if you go back to AD 325, we have what's called the First Council of Nicaea. And there was a Roman emperor named Constantine who wanted to unite the Christians that existed in the earth, on the earth at that time. And it didn't work out that well in many ways. For example, let me make a quick tangent back onto the letter J for just a second. The history of the letter J, it's the youngest letter in our alphabet. So typically in ancient times, the people that we refer to now, for example, with the letter J, like Julius Caesar, their names began with an I. Like Job was originally the book of Iob. And I don't know how you pronounce Julius Caesar with an I, but you can try if you like. There is the 1611 version of the King James Bible, you see the name Iesus in it, I-E-S-U-S, but not the name Jesus. So no books written before 1600 had the letter J in them. Copies of the Gutenberg Bible still exist where the book of Job is called the book of Iob, and I found a website here recently that has some good images of that, and I'm going to, as I continue to put this stuff together on my website, I'm going to continue on that. Anyway, the First Council of Nicaea was brought together because people of the Roman Empire, most of them worshipped Apollo and Zeus or Julius Caesar, as we call him today. And believe it or not, he was hailed as God made manifest, or the universal savior of all life. There's an interesting website called Yahweh.com, where they talk about this Council of Nicaea, and they say, throughout the meeting, howling factions were immersed in heated debates, and the names of 53 gods were tabled for discussion. So they were trying to figure out what was the real name of the person that we call Jesus Christ today. Do you think we've ever been told about any of this controversy? No. Now, according to one particular group that I've studied here, it says that Constantine finally had to intervene, and he ruled that the name of the Druid god Jesus would be joined with the name of an Eastern savior god called Krishna, and that this god would be called Jesus Krishna. Now, the Meyer material says his name was Emmanuel. So they actually voted on this name, and the majority agreed to the new name. And this became the name. This was before the New Testament, right around the time the New Testament was about to be written down. The origin of the letter J. There was no name Jesus in ancient world because the letter J did not exist at that time. There was no letter J in the ancient world. The letter J came into existence around 1550 with a guy named Gian Giorgio Turrisino. He was a playwright, scholar, a bit of a scribe, and he started, I guess, in some writings to exchange the letter I with the J. J, it's a letter of the alphabet. It's a modification of the Latin I. It dates back only to about the 15th century. And in some cases, the new letter J was substituted for the letter I or the letter Y. So the name Jesus was either Iesus or Jesus. It's kind of a hybrid name. The name Jesus had no distinctive etymology and a root meaning. In fact, the letter J did not exist in any languages until roughly the time of Christopher Columbus. And you can prove this if you look it up in an unabridged dictionary under the letter J. No one referred to the Christ as Jesus in the ancient world. Very strange. You'd think that that would be better known. Some people say there was a transliteration of the word Yeshua into Jesus. Yeshua in the Hebrew became Iesus in the Greek, or Isoos in the Latin, and eventually Jesus in the English. Interesting, isn't it? 1611 version of the Bible. I have an image on my website that says the New Testament of our Lord and Savior. In this case, I-E-S-V-S is the spelling. Some people say the word Jesus never appeared until 1632 in a course case document that was talking about poorly printed Bibles. The letter J, they call it sometimes a swash letter. A swash letter is a fancy typographical flourish. If you look into the Old English, it goes back to the 12th or 13th century, there was no letter J in the Old English. So the Old English goes something like A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, T, V, X, Y, Z, ampersand, question mark. There was no W, J, or U in the Old English. And there's a great video on YouTube called The Letter J. Try to look it up if you can. Now, maybe I have that clip. I don't know if I do. No, I make no promises. Let me look in my... I will look in my studio real quick. And it's extremely slow. Anyway, the letter J did not exist until about 1550 when Gian Giorgio Turrisino allegedly invented the letter J. Okay, here we go. I'm going to try to play this. I'll have to turn up full blast for you.
J is the youngest letter of the alphabet. The letter J is roughly 500 years old and was not part of the ancient Greek, Hebrew, or Latin alphabets. By way of contrast, the ampersand, a combination of the letters E and T, is 2,000 years old. The oldest letter is O, which has been with us for 3,000 years. J descended figuratively and literally from the letter I and was used to give a consonant sound to the letter I. Consider how the letter A sounds differently depending on the word it is used in. Baby or bath, for instance. At one time, I might have been used to sound both like I or like J. Important political and religious figures whose names started with the letter I lived before the invention of the letter J, and today their names are commonly spelled with a J rather than with an I. Julius Caesar was born in approximately 100 BC, and Jesus Christ was born in approximately 5 BC. Some scholars believe that names that began with I were pronounced as if they began with Y, and pronunciations evolved over time. To some people, there are religious implications in the spelling of religious names. Of course, there are no recordings from these time periods, and scholars must rely on ancient texts for guidance. Any books written before 1600 had no J's as we know them. In 1455, Johannes Gutenberg invented movable type, which some consider humankind's greatest invention. Gutenberg's first name likely started with I because he was born before J's were used. Copies of the Gutenberg Bible still exist, and in it Job, for instance, was spelled I-O-B. Similarly, the 1611 edition of the King James Bible had no J's, but 1769 editions of the King James Bible had J's. Some credit Italian playwright and scholar Gian Giorgio Cicino, who was born in 1478, for the official split of I from J. Cicino wrote that the consonant J should be a distinct letter from the vowel I. Similarly, Cicino wrote that the vowel U should be separate from the consonant V. Both ideas grew in popularity, and thus we have J's and U's.
I must say that particular YouTube video did more to dispel any doubts that I had about the Meyer story of Emmanuel than anything I ever came across. I mean, it's absolutely impossible logically to call the person that we call Jesus today Jesus. You have to understand his name was Emmanuel. Or you can argue logically that his name was Yeshua or Isis or one of these other names. But you'd think that we would get the name of the most important figure in Western society correct, but no, we didn't. I was totally shocked when I found this out. Well, we've only got about 15 minutes here in the show, so what I want to focus on now is maybe some of the spiritual teachings. I sometimes talk about the fulfillment of your duty to yourself, which is described in the book called The Way to Live, Die Art zu Leben, which was written in 1995 by Edward Albert Meyer and translated by Vivian Legge and Dyson Devine into English. Keep in mind that Billy's books are bilingual. There's a German text side, which if you read it in the German, it will affect your subconscious, unconscious with this evolution code. I'm not good enough in the German yet to be able to do that, to be honest. But I do learn some key German words in order to understand. It helps me a lot in understanding. So one of the things as far as fulfilling your duty to yourself means that you have no self-abuse and no feelings of inferiority. I think a lot of us are plagued in some ways by feelings of inferiority. You should also have no bitterness. You need to be gentle to yourself, but at the same time, challenge your mind and your body. Never neglect your striving. And we talk about striving on the show a lot. Your sense of life your happiness is dependent on striving. A horrible distraction is to devote yourself to your passions, your lusts, your vices or addictions. It's a constant struggle. But there is no real happiness outside of striving. Use your intelligence and your rational logic and enjoy the fulfillment of your responsibility. Always challenge your mind and your body, meaning continue to learn, get exercise. If you devote yourself to your passions, you will end up like someone running through the smoldering desert, dying of thirst. Not a pleasant end. Give yourself sufficient respect. Don't do things in the hidden areas that you would be ashamed of. Don't forfeit your self-esteem. Keep yourself well-dressed and keep yourself in good order in terms of your hair and your fingernails and your, if you're a guy, your mustache and your beard. Never be despairing. Never be in bad temper. Do you know that all human beings evolve to the Ishwish King of Wisdom level, every single one of us? Hard to believe, but it's very, very true. I'm stunned by that. Don't allow yourself to be controlled by desires, lusts, or the desire to be the lead important person. If you're suffering through boredom is the death of all initiative. Get to work. Don't allow yourself to be bored. Never allow yourself to be dissatisfied. That is another trap that will also devastate your spiritual life. Now, one of the creational natural laws is the law of reincarnation. And we all reincarnate. We have a spirit form that never dies. And according to my information, is about 4 million years old. Your past lives are blocked so that you don't have devastating confusion. Memories of the earlier life that would influence your current personality are generally blocked, so you do not have devastating confusion, and that could actually lead to insanity. So forgetting is a protection to your consciousness so that your personality can develop freely during this current lifetime. However, you have an innermost I that's related to your spirit form, your Geist form. That's where your real self comes from. But you also have a false I, which is your quirks in this lifetime. It's the self-created personality. It's associated with your material consciousness. Sometimes it's called the false I and the false ego. It is threatened by your spiritual evolution. And it tries to exercise a kind of tyranny over the inner I. The false I tries to complicate everything. The false I, by meaning it tries to complicate, it tries to make things more confusing or difficult. The false ego tends to create a tyranny over your consciousness. Remember, a tyranny is arbitrary use of power. So most people experience a kind of inner conflict from these aspects of the self that are engaged sometimes in war between each other. The tyranny of the false I is characterized by the German word Gewaltsamkeit. One of the important aspects of the Meyer material deals with striving. It is a human being's nature to strive. The human being should strive for knowledge and wisdom. In fact, wisdom and love go together. Semyase used to tell Billy that wisdom and love go together. The creation and its laws are wisdom and love at the same time. Constructive thoughts bring a kind of calm over the entire consciousness. Striving creates your sense of life, the meaning of your life. You should kind of devote your life around striving, but give yourself time for play time and be neutral about it. When you're striving, be relaxed about striving. But if you're without striving, it means you'll have affliction. So always leave room for striving. It's where your real pleasure and delight comes from. Your inhibited striving will bring inhibited evolution, hopelessness, grief, confusion. Remember, during the third millennium, a kind of confusion and maliciousness is spreading over the earth. Do not allow this confusion and maliciousness to spread over you. If you strive and continue to strive, and the good thing about striving is if you maintain your neutral positive nature, you won't feel overextended when you're striving. You won't feel exhausted necessarily. Moderate your striving, but always continue to strive. And there are actually circumstances which come against the striving. You'll have roadblocks. There's always two poles. There's an opposition pole that's against the striving. And based on the teaching of creational laws, there must always be a minus and a plus, a pro and a con, a negative and a positive. Together, these two poles produce a oneness. Therefore, it's inevitable that with any striving, there are negative influences and machinations, just like you have heat with fire. Put another way, this means that no success can be attained without some negative aspect being involved. So you'll have a negative aspect that comes along with your striving. But always remain neutral, so that you can follow the diligent impulses of your spirit form. Let me read a little something called related to silent devotion. And if I see any creatures or any flowers and any bushes on the wayside, then joy and happiness bubble up within me. Just as when a bird chirps, the sun shines, or when the rain or snow falls from the sky, my joy is all so endlessly great. When I see the stars twinkle in the nighttime sky, when the heavy gale roars in my ears, when lightning zips through the air and the powerful thunder shakes the world. Whenever I am and at whatever time that is, I thus find every day and every night many things that I enjoy, that let me recognize the mightiness of creation, and let me tremble with awe down to my deepest innermost part. And the keystone of my thoughts is that the whole splendor of the world and the universe creates infinitely much joy, happiness, and harmony within me in such a way that I linger in the highest respect for the tremendous creational display of splendor and love and reverential silent devotion. This is a page which exists on the Billy Meyer Wiki. It's called Silent Devotion, and it's a writing of Edward Albert Meyer. He wrote this in 2005 at the Semyonovsky Silver Star Center in Hinterschmidt-Ruti. I'll read just a little bit more. In our beautiful world of creation, there are so many joys. I must only seek, find, make them certain to myself and understand them. At the same time, I must not also spurn the small things and the smallest things. Otherwise, I crush many of the joys, because I must consider that I not only look upward and not only at the large things and largest, but also must look at and respect the tiny things which lie under and before my feet. Also, I must be content with my fate, because with grumbling and groaning, I only harm myself and bring myself further in no way. I am always the forger of my own destiny, and its wheel continues to rotate unstoppably, regardless of whether I cry or laugh. Therefore, I must shape my life in joy and cheer, not whine and never be hopeless, but carry on my lifestyle in a confident, trusting, and courageous way in order to achieve great things. From that, and in order to make no gloomy day, even in the greatest distress. Thus I enjoy life because my life's lamp still glows, and I smell the fragrance of the roses. I do not seek their thorns and catch their small joys which bestow existence to me. This goes on and on. It's one of the incredible, beautiful writings of Edward Albert Meyer. You know, Billy says that love is the highest principle in all creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And its creation radiates love, so that at every point and every place, every human can come up against the radiating love of creation. The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And you can see the light which the stars emit, but there's an invisible light which is called the love of creation. And creation radiates love. And I hope you've enjoyed the show this afternoon. I've enjoyed bringing it to you. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, everyone, for all the people listening to the archives. It's been incredible. You can change the world. We can change the world through this material. Thank you very much.